So this evening and all throughout this weekend, I wanted to have a conversation with you about wisdom and compassion. And when I talk about compassion and wisdom, I'm talking about relative reality and absolute reality. And how do we really integrate those two in our lives so that we live a life of fullness, so that we live a life that's really integrated, and we live a life that is able to face what's happening around us in the world and not close down or not strike out, not bring up states of mind and heart that fight with what's going on, but can open to what's going on so that we can actually do something about it when we can. And when we can also open to the states of mind themselves within us so that we're able to see what's arising and passing away in ourselves moment to moment, kind of on an absolute way, where we're not making concepts out of what's going on, but we're seeing the kind of pixelated view of reality. We do that, we learn how to do that a lot in retreat, you know, when we have the support around us of kind of a schedule to follow, the noble silence when we are having times of noble silence, times where we can really just be still in our bodies, and when we can walk and just feel the nature around us, and when we can see more deeply within what's going on moment to moment, and what are we really bringing to the world in that pixelated view, that kind of moment-to-moment experience of seeing just in an absolute realm. This is a moment of happiness. This is a moment of aversion. This is a moment of gratitude. This is a moment of love. This is a moment of hatred. This is a moment of resentment. So how do we bring together the relative, which is the relational, in our lives? And that means not just relating to the world around us and people around us, but we're also learning how to relate with ourselves and what's going on inside of us. So that's the relative and the relational. And when we can open to all of that, we learn how to do it with more kindness, more equanimity, more balance, so that we can see more clearly what's really happening beneath the ways we react to the world. We can open up to the experience of the Dharma. The Dharma means seeing things as they really are, seeing the impermanent nature of everything, not just in a way where we see the seasons change or we see our children grow up and all the different conditions that come with that, or the changes in our lives and relationship-wise and how people go through health conditions and there's death in our lives. We learn how to relate to that in a way that can open to the wisdom of seeing the impermanence more deeply. So I'd like to start out this evening and this weekend talking more about compassion, and then as we go on in the weekend, talking more about the impermanent and impersonal nature of all of life. And within all that, intertwining all that all along the way. One of the most beautiful feelings a person can experience is unconditional compassion. When our genuine caring and connection can open to the suffering of another person, when we can do that in a way that our heart feels soft and not like we're ripping it open, but we can come to that in a way that's really natural for us. And it becomes even more beautiful and sometimes rare for us as human beings when we can actually open to ourselves with compassion, when we can see what's the harshness of our own hearts, and we don't have to push away or feel ashamed or blame ourselves or to think we're wrong or we're a failure, but to really just open to those difficult places in us where we feel lost or we feel a sense of loss or we feel confused, we don't know what to do. And this is often our state of mind. And yet we keep running away from it because we haven't really found a way to come close to it sometimes, to just be with it in a way that helps us see what's really going on in ourselves as human beings. And sometimes for us, it helps us to open to that first, to see ourselves first in that way. And sometimes we can't open there right away. We need to practice with opening our hearts to the world, to people around us, to our own children, to our partners who are in their own difficulty, and to be patient and to still be loving even when we're faced with people who aren't loving towards us. So sometimes it helps to open outwardly before we can open to ourselves. And we come to know that for ourselves. I was listening a few months ago to a lecture online given by Dr. Stephen Porges. And he's the director of Brain and Body Center at the University of Illinois. And he actually studies more the neural biology and how, in this particular talk, he talked about how neural biology fits in with compassion. And I found it very interesting. His talk was on the origins of compassion. So his study spans the brain and the biology of the nervous system. And it gave me a kind of a scientific understanding, but also a way to look at it as if everything that happens to us in the way that we open to suffering or that we close down to suffering or in a way that we open to compassion with another, open to ourselves with compassion, and how that can help really settle the nervous system so that we can be more relaxed around it. And then eventually, in terms of the Dharma, how I kind of put it out even further is how, when we can do that, we really can open to something more deep, open to understandings that are helping us to kind of not be so reactive to what goes on outwardly and inwardly when we watch the defilements that come up within us. But we can rest the mind and heart. We can really see more clearly so that all these things that happen in the relational realm aren't just pulling our lives apart in a way that we can't handle things. So we see, for example, we may see a situation with one of our family members. I raised four children, and they're all, thank goodness, knock on wood, they're all pretty good right now. I would say right now. But there were times when it was really, really difficult. And probably some of you can know this for yourselves too in your own lives. When, you know, when I'm faced with like a screaming teenager who's wanting to find his or her separation from myself or from the parent. And that I can really see, when I can really see, oh, that person's going, I can take a step and go beyond my aversion to it and say that this child of mine, this teenage child of mine, is now going through something really difficult, and there's a lot of pain in his heart right now. And so I'm able to open to that pain, but then I'm able to also open to the pain in my heart because of that. And I'm able to say, it's really painful to see what's going on. Somebody that I love so much, somebody so close to me. It's also really painful in here. So that's the relational part. So I can stay with it. So I can stay with the difficulty. And I don't have to push it away or run away from it. I can actually stay with it because I can realize it's hard for that person, it's hard for me too. And there's compassion coming up and facing that difficulty. That's the relational part, the relative part. And when the heart feels more and more relaxed and more calm, cooled out and clear, and maybe it's not in those moments. Maybe it's the moments when I'm taking time for myself in the day and I'm sitting by myself. Or maybe I've, you know, gone off for one of those times of the year when I take time for myself in retreat. And when I can really see more deeply than that there is a this person and this person, that there's a you and a me, and that I can just see underneath all of that, there are just all these experiences coming and going, and really see the impermanence of it on such a deep level that I'm not so caught in the relational realm, but I can also understand the absolute realm. And it's not that I take the absolute and I just can say, it's all impermanent, so it doesn't matter. But I can also say, it's all impermanent, and it matters so much that I face this with compassion. It's really important that I take that into account. So I'm integrating the compassion and the absolute level of seeing the impermanent, impersonal nature of it. Because when we can see the impermanent nature of it, and I'll talk about this on the last day of retreat, we really see how impersonal it all is. And so when we're in the throes and the fire of being in this relational fire with someone, we can see this really hurts. And what that person is doing or saying is not really skillful, but neither is the way I'm reacting to it. Or maybe one's being skillful and one isn't. But there's an ability to see that with more clarity, and there's a way where the mind can also reach deep down and say, I also can understand how impersonal this all is. Because in my own heart and in that person's heart, there are so many causes and conditions for that person to go through what they're going through. And so many causes and conditions for me to relate in the particular way I'm relating, maybe with rage or with insecurity or with whatever. And perhaps maybe with compassion. And in all that I can see, you know, this is totally out of our control sometimes. It's so impersonal. It's so beyond a sense of self that we can't figure it out. And we just kind of have to let it unravel itself once in a while. And so we get to the part of ourselves where even in the moment of a big fire, we see the absolute of it. We see the impersonal nature. We see the impermanent nature. We see the nature of that there's not going to be eternal moments of satisfaction. There are going to be many moments of the unsatisfactoriness of life. And this is how it is. It's all of that is how it is. So when we can integrate both into our lives, it's really important. And it takes training to do that. It's taken many years of my own training to come to even moments of being able to do that. And really helpful in moments of going through really difficult times in my life when I don't blame myself or I don't blame another person or I don't feel ashamed or embarrassed. When life goes wrong, you know, you just feel like you feel embarrassed about that your life isn't going right, that you're not ending up with the partner you thought you were going to end up with. It's embarrassing. But then you also know that embarrassing moment is also impermanent. You know, it doesn't last. And so then there are moments of okayness and joy after that. So you remember all, you remember the absolute. You tune into it at times that are important. You tune into the compassion, maybe one right after another, in a way that's interweaving in our lives. So what Stephen Borges was saying is that the biology of the nervous system and the brain is really important to understand, because this is what we call, now he could call this science, but what I call this is nature. One of my teachers, Seda Utejaniya, calls this nature. This is the nature of this body and mind continuum. There is both a psychological and sociological implication to this. So what he's trying to express here is that we have a need as human beings for compassionate connection. This is our biological and sociological need. This is the nature of us as human beings. This is nature, where we need to have connection with one another. It's really important to have connection. And he gave quite a unique description, Dr. Borges, of this, of the compassion from the place of the giver of compassion and compassion from the place of the receiver of compassion. So if you can look at this as natural for us as human beings, it just helps us to relax more into the relative, into the relational understanding of life. So the giver of compassion, in the giving, it's the manifestation of our human need to engage, to connect, and to bond with one another. We do that in terms of the Dharma. We hear this explanation of compassion, the description. It's the quivering of the heart to alleviate suffering. So we do that by approaching to soothe and to help. And so this is very much in the Dharma as well, this understanding of our need to engage and to bond with one another. It comes up in a very natural way, the quivering of the heart to engage, to connect, to help. On the receiver side, compassion is a component of our biological quest for safety in the proximity of another. So when somebody reaches out and they say, I want to just stay with you while you're going through this time right now. I want to just be by your side for these moments or whatever, these days. When somebody's dying, for example, that's what we want to do. We want to be by their side. Or when somebody's going through some emotional difficulty, don't you just feel sometimes you just want somebody to hold you or to touch you or to just say it's okay to hold your hand? It's sometimes just human touch is so much more important than a lot of words. So on the receiver's side, it's our quest for safety in the proximity of another. So when we sense that compassion in another reaching out to help us, to kind of be a protection for us in those moments, it feels like, oh, this is safe. We want this as a human being. This is not a want that's going to lead to suffering. It's momentary end of suffering, you know, or lessening of suffering. It's kind of a biological human nature need that we have. We want to feel safe in the presence of another. So when they're reaching out, we accept that. So, of course, when this happens, we feel an open-hearted flow, both the giver and the receiver. This is compassion, how it helps both. This open-hearted flow of positive energy within ourselves and towards others. There's an unhesitating courage to face and to go towards and to be with what is hard to bear. So, when somebody comes to us because they can see that it's hard to bear for us. I know a lot of times it's been the opposite way too. When I've helped somebody in the Dharma or in my own family, I can see it's hard for me to bear their suffering too. It's hard for me to go through all their hurts and pains. And so I feel that is the same way when people help me through times of difficulty for me, just hearing kind of like how I feel awful or feel hurt, and especially when it's, you know, one of your good friends and they're hearing it over and over again, and you can see their eyes roll, oh, I'm going to hear this again from her. You know, but it's hard to bear for the person that's listening. It's hard to bear for the person that's feeling it. But somehow there's a sense of wholeness that's happening within the whole thing. There's a kind of religious sacredness, non-religious sacredness that we feel. There's a kind of being in the naturalness of it all and feeling like, yeah, this is how life is. It's opening to the suffering of how life is. It's opening to what's hard to bear. And it's the positivity of it is that it's like being in a rainstorm where there's a lot of thunder and lightning, but somehow the wonder of it keeps you there. You know, the ability to say, I can be with this. And it feels like you have strength in you and you're offering the strength to another, or vice versa. And both of you feel that kind of sacredness in the connection. Because we know we can face not just what's pleasant, not only the joy of life, which we tend to chase after, of course, but we can also learn to be with the pain of life. And the sense of vastness that comes with that is so great. The sense of our heart being vast, being big enough to hold both the pain and the joy of life. And I feel like if you're really becoming more and more human, your heart gets bigger. You just have a bigger bandwidth to hold everything. But sometimes you don't, of course, and you just say, I can't take it right now, and that's compassion for oneself. But the ability to be vulnerable, you know, this vulnerability, the ability to be vulnerable takes a lot of strength and a lot of courage to open to that in ourselves and others and to really connect with that in ourselves and others. So in some mysterious way, compassion makes us feel complete as a human being, the strength to face what's hard, being able and willing to care for ourselves and others in this life, not in a way that's kind of surface-like, but when we can just go really deep into it. And when you can really be able to say, as much as I can, I feel your pain. And it's not, sometimes it's not because you've even gone near that pain, but it's because you know something of pain in your own life. And we don't close down. Maybe there are times when you have to take a breath and you have to say, let's just slow down the words for a moment and just be with just a few breaths, a few moments of silence, and then connect again. So for me, I just feel it gives me meaning and purpose to my life to be able to feel like I'm really a full human being, that I can integrate it all, the pain and the sorrow and the relational and the absolute of life and all the other ways that life can be kind of opposite of each other. When I was, I'll probably say this again in the weekend, but this is part of another Dharma talk I'm just remembering now. When I was younger, in my 20s, I remember sitting down with one of my teachers and asked him, what's the purpose of my life anyway? And I found this in an old journal like years and years later. And I realized, oh, I wish I could have remembered that many more times than just now, because it probably took me about 10 or 15 years to open up that journal and read that. But the answer to the question was, or it still is, the purpose of your life is to develop compassion and wisdom. And what I would say in addition to that is to really integrate those two in your life. Recently, a friend of mine going through something really, really difficult in her life with a lot of death of people close to her and also in her own personal relationship, some difficulty coming up. And hearing her speak with me and in a very, you know, sometimes with a lot of tears and sometimes with a lot of anger and sometimes with a lot of understanding and compassion also for herself and another. And there were times when it was really hard for me to open to it. And I could say to her, this is really hard for me to hear this too from you. And just being truthful with her helped her to just be more truthful about herself and say, yeah, I have a hard time opening this to this too. And then the kind of the softening around it. And in the quietness around it, you know, we could feel that connection with one another. And then just as she has been with me through so much of my own trials and tribulations of life, and hearing me say the same old story, you know, then this time now it's my turn. Now I hear her story, hearing it over and over again. And so I can understand in myself during times, you know, this won't be always the way it is for her. I know deeply that things are going to change. And so I understand the absolute level of reality too. It's sometimes a lot easier to understand it for another than for oneself. But I don't say to her, it's all impermanent, you know. I know nothing lasts, you know, so your dad's going to die. Or your partner's going to whatever. I remember some, you know, when that would be said to me, it would be like, I would just want to slap somebody, you know, and say, don't say that. It's true, but don't say that right now. It's not appropriate, right? So you say what's appropriate at the time. And a lot of times you might not say that, you know, when somebody's going through a lot of hurt, you don't say, don't take it so personally. Don't you know everything's impersonal? Right? That stuff is called spiritual bypassing, where you just talk about the absolute all the time and you don't really get into, like, what does it mean to have behavior that doesn't hurt another person, to have speech and behavior that's compassionate? What does that really mean in your life? So you're careful about those things. You may understand, maybe not all the time, but in a moment, how impersonal it is, or how impermanent, or how unsatisfactory life is. So, okay, let's just deal with it. But you have mostly what we need is to learn compassion, which has underneath it the understanding of the wisdom side of seeing how it's so impersonal, it's so impermanent. We're not really going to be totally satisfied forever. It's going to change. So it's no wonder that these qualities of open-hearted strength and courage, like compassion, love, unconditional care, kindness, these come in the Dharma. They're known as inner wealth. It's a feeling of holistic completeness when we feel that, when we can really be with that. It's something that no one can take away from us. A lot can be taken away on our deathbed, of course, and during the time that we're going through times when of illness and when our bodies aren't working the same way, and then eventually we die. But in those dying moments and in the times when our health is taken away, no one can take away the compassion that we've learned in our lives. No one can take away the wisdom or that unconditional kindness that we can feel no matter what somebody does or says or we do or say to ourselves, we can eventually forgive. So compassion is that strength of love that can open to what's difficult. In the turning of the wheel of the Dharma, the Buddha laid out the Four Noble Truths. And this is the wisdom part of it. The wisdom part of understanding what life is all about. And, you know, the Buddha was not a pessimist, he was a realist. So many of you know about the Four Noble Truths already, and where he started out with the first Noble Truth as being, there is the truth of suffering. Now, in Pali, it's called dukkha saccha. Dukkha means suffering, in short. And saccha means the truth. There is the truth of suffering. And so I love that it started out that way, because in all the, when I came to the Dharma in my 20s, I hadn't heard that before. And when I first heard that, I thought, well, somebody's really just saying it like it is. Just saying, like, this is what we need to face in our lives. You know, so we start out with, what is the problem? There is the truth of suffering. And my problem was that I wasn't seeing it as a truth. I was seeing it as, it is, that's a problem for me. And it, because I'm suffering, it makes me a failure. But what the Buddha said was that we can open to this, we can investigate this. And it's not about being in denial of it. We actually need to start facing that truth. And in order to do that, we need to have a lot of compassion for ourselves, for others, for the world, in order to face that truth. Because if we don't, if we don't have compassion, we won't be able to open to it. Our hearts will just close down. Because naturally, when there's pain here or pain out there, our hearts would close down. It's hard to face. Sometimes we strike out with the opposite of compassion, which is cruelty. Or we turn away, which is ignorance. We turn away. We don't want to face it. Or we make it into something else. That's delusion. We see it, but we don't see it clearly. So throughout his life, he taught that it's a quality of compassion that greatly supports us as we're constantly faced with the first noble truth in life. He gave compassion as a vitally important role to develop on our spiritual path. And that's why Manindra said to me, you need both. You need compassion. And then you need compassion to open up, to really open up to the truth of how it is. It said that the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Noble Path, this is part of the wisdom understanding of the Dharma, actually. So in our practice here together in our lives, we all see for ourselves that when we open to a difficult experience, sometimes it can bring us a lot of, there's a possibility for our hearts actually to soften and to be gentle around what's happening. And in that way, we can be more clear about what's going on, kind of on a relative level. And then we can also be more clear. Our hearts are still enough, clear enough to see more deeply into what's going on. So we're able to see the more ultimate level, the more absolute level of reality. So it opens us to the truth to see the cause of suffering. And that's a longer talk, to understand attachment, to understand craving, and to be able to see the end of suffering. So I want to read this poem by Khalil Gibran. It's been with me for a long time, even since I was in my teens. Your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding. Even as a stone of the fruit must break open that its heart may stand in the sun, so you must know pain. And if you could keep your heart in wonder at the daily miracles of your life, your pain would not seem less wondrous than your joy. So I wonder, you know, it's kind of a koan. How can we open to the pain of life and see that as kind of a beauty instead of how we normally see it? How we can see that as something as wondrous as joy to open to? Because something's breaking open so that we can see life as it really is, rather than all the ways that we want it to be. Maya, or Maya Angelou, is one of the poets that I revere a lot. And I came across this one. She said, "We delight in the beauty of a butterfly, but rarely admit the changes it has gone through to achieve that beauty." You know, the breaking of the shell of the cocoon, of the chrysalis, and just opening its wings to be able to really fly. So it takes really opening to, it takes hardships, it takes heartbreak. It takes a lot to open that shell that turns into a tree that bears fruit, or that cocoon, the butterfly. You know, I learned that takes a lot of energy and a lot of poking, a lot of, you know, reaching for that to open, for a butterfly, for the butterfly to break through that. We live in this electronic age where the frequency and intensity of seeing and hearing and knowing what's happening globally affects us a lot, steadily. I don't know about you, but I really have to make myself take some breaks from listening to and hearing and reading about what's going on all over, because it's just so heavy sometimes. And my own reactivity to it, you know, because I'm not fully purified in the Dharma, that there's still a lot of reactivity to what's going on, and I feel overwhelmed. The shifting and changing planet, the melting icebergs and the glaciers. And a few years ago, I was at Mount Rainier, and here in your beautiful state, and that beautiful mountain, and walking along pathways and meeting the rangers and hearing that the 30-plus glaciers are melting at a rate never seen before during that time, and probably still is. So the changing ocean currents and sea levels are going up. There are going to be, within 10 or 20 years, you know, a lot of communities being displaced. And, you know, I live in Hawaii, so I hear a lot about the Pacific Islanders and how a lot of them are losing their homes and their communities due to the levels of water rising on different islands in the Pacific. And then, of course, the worldwide social, political, and religious and tribal wars that go on, the cultural, racial, economic inequities, the disparities among gender that are so unfair. So then the emotional tsunamis that are happening in our own families. So usually compassion is thought of in terms of helping or saving others and facing the struggles of life out there in the world. But it's important to include and to start with opening to the truth of suffering in ourselves. And that's where we start to learn and more deeply go into the absolute or the ultimate view of reality, and being able to really experience the impersonal, impermanent nature on that level, and to kind of weave it in to understanding the truth of suffering and how we need so much compassion to face it. And as we delve into it more deeply, seeing the cause, seeing that it can end, and knowing the path to the end, the Eightfold Noble Path, we can become clearer. We can become more full as human beings. His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, "Until you understand the meaning of suffering, there will be a measure of hypocrisy to your life, to your compassion." So, just on a basic level, we experience this pain in the body. That's suffering. You know, we sit here for long enough. Why do we always move? Because we feel pain in the body. You know, we feel a little something here, and then we get trepidation of what can come up more, and then we get pain in the mind because there's fear. That's pain in the mind. And we fear more pain of the body, so we move, and then sometimes we learn to just see that all come and go, and we don't have to move as much. And we get older, and there's more aches and pains in the body, and then there's the pain of hunger, the pain of illness. Just a few days ago, I was not feeling, coming down with this cold, and then feeling like a lot of chills in the body and a lot of kind of feverish and also flu-y kind of pain in the body. And just being with it on that level of saying, wow, this is the being human, you know. And I remember once in a long retreat, one of the Burmese teachers said, "This is good to get used to this, because this is what your body will be when you're dying, maybe." So just said it straight out like that, you know. pain in the mind and the heart, like sadness and hatred. I mean, when we can look at that and really say, "Ooh, wow, this fire in the mind, you know, that really wants to strike out sometimes." The holding tightly to resentment, or the feeling less than, you know, or feeling diminished. It's painful. The fickleness and the uncontrollability of the mind, the inability to hold on to anything, pleasant or unpleasant experiences come and go, people come and go. Everything's always changing. It's so vulnerable. Life is so vulnerable. There are periods of time when I notice the mind sees more impermanence than it sees the impersonal nature, or the mind sees more dukkha. You know, we're sometimes just even coming over here, just looking around and seeing decay. You know, just seeing houses that are kind of maybe falling apart, or a lot of leaves on the ground that are decaying, or going by somebody that, like I was in Portland just before this, and seeing a lot of homeless people on the streets, and then just actually seeing how their bodies were, some of them were frail. Some of them you could see, you know, grayness, kind of the decline of what's going on in their bodies, and just seeing the dukkha of life all around. But not saying, "Oh, you know, poor, yeah, do what you can to help people," but really just seeing, this is life. This is what I'm in, and this is what the mind is seeing. It's seeing the dukkha nature right now. And you know, in that moment, you might stop and say, "Well, here's what I can give you to help you with a meal." And at the same time, you're seeing, this is how it is in life. You see the dukkha nature. Or when you know, your grandchildren are growing up. I was just with my two grand boys, and I haven't seen them for a few months. And one, just from 5-something, is now 6'1". You know, and it was like way taller than me already. He's only like 14, too. And so I just think, wow, just how impermanent. It seemed like yesterday I just saw him. You know, and just feeling like like his life just went through my hands like water. And I lost all those moments of being with him. You know, I felt the impermanence. And I just felt the loss, the dukkha-ness of it in that moment. And then, you know, then I looked at him and I saw, what a fine young man. You know, to see the impersonal and also the impermanent on that level of the absolute. But then you also really connect as a human being to that fine young man, you know, and just feel the pride of being, in Hawaii they call me a tutu, so I'm tutu, tutu Kamala. And the pride of being a grandma. And so it's really wonderful to have those ways where we can integrate in the moment. And when we can't, I mean, just between, you know, this is my choice. When you're in this human realm, between compassion and being with the absolute, I would rather have compassion. Because that's what's appropriate in our life, in a relational realm. To be kind, to open, to, you know, hold their suffering with them when you can. And to connect with your own, maybe at the same time. So we can become more connected and open to what's going on within us. And we don't succumb to, like, pushing away by avoiding or by striking out because we don't like it. But we open to whatever is going on. And maybe at the same time we can relax enough to really see it on a deeper level. And connect with it on that level, just kind of quietly within us. And be able to say, this is how it is right now with you, with me, and relationally. On a relative level, on a level of just being human. And the humanness of not being perfect. And then at the same time, we may be able to open to seeing, you know, this is by so many causes and conditions, the understanding this in a way that helps us to take into account karma. You know, it's so imponderable. What comes up in this moment is coming up because imponderable causes and conditions. So we can't even understand why this or that happens in a moment, or people die earlier than we think they're going to die, or there's all kinds of things that happen in life, sickness, separation, accidents, body, mind stuff that can be shocking. So we learn how to really be with it, to recognize this vulnerability in a way that helps us say, okay, this is the truth of life on a relative level, and maybe we can see the absolute level too, and we can bring them together somehow. But somehow, to see it more deeply, we need a more quiet mind. We need a mind that doesn't react so much. Because when we're reacting, we're not in wisdom. We're not anywhere near wisdom. But actually, when we can bring equanimity to that moment of reactivity, the mind can settle down a little more and there's an ability to see more clearly. So this weekend, I'd like to speak more about equanimity and fill that out. I came across this poem by Mark Nepo. He's a poet writer who's gone through a lot in his life, a lot of physical and a lot of emotional experiences, and he writes about it a lot. How many of you have heard of Mark Nepo? Yeah, beautiful writer. He speaks deeply. So in one of his writings, part of it, he said, "Having loved enough and lost enough, I am no longer searching, just opening, no longer trying to make sense of pain, but being a soft and sturdy home in which real things can land. These are the irritations that rub to a pearl." And the pearl is that wisdom. And then that wisdom brings you more compassion, because with more wisdom you say, this is why we need to connect more. We see how the cause and effect relationship of everything that's happening is really so impersonal. And it's really so impermanent, and it's just moving along according to causes and conditions. What else can we do but be more kind to one another, be more compassionate with one another? So one way that's practical that we can do this, that I'd like to bring an old acronym to your attention. Some of you have heard of this already, this RAIN acronym. In our practice, you know, how we can bring that. And I changed it a little because in practicing with Utejaniya, there were different words that he used these words just kind of allowed me to sink more deeply into understanding the true nature of reality and to just bring more gentleness to it. So the first part of the acronym RAIN, R-A-I-N, is R. And R stands for relax. It used to stand for recognize, but relax is the number one thing. So just relax with what's going on, because we're usually at like the fight or flight mode right away. And in compassion, they found another mode that we as human beings go through. It's not just fight, flight, or freeze, but there's also approach and soothe. And this is the compassionate heart. We have the nature to do that as well, to approach, maybe it's ourselves or others, and soothe, to alleviate suffering. So to relax. And then another part of the R is to recognize clearly what's really going on. What's really going on? And so we might recognize it on that relative relational level, and maybe we can access the ultimate absolute as well. But if we can't, that's okay. Just relating on that level of bringing compassion to that moment, that's already wonderful. That's already actually a wisdom to do that. So recognize clearly what's going on within us or outside of us. And then the A in the RAIN is for allow. Just allow it to unfold. Allow it to do its thing. Most of the time we're trying to fix it, or we're trying to change it. Or we're not on task with making things better. So we need to allow ourselves to be, and for that to whatever that beingness is in that moment to unfold. Because then we learn a lot about what's going on. We see a lot more. And the I in RAIN is to be interested in it, to take interest in what's going on. I like that word because it implies that, you know, when there's something there in front of you, I always like to use the example of slugs, because you have a lot of slugs in Washington. And when I'm at Cloud Mountain, when I teach there, I see these slugs that are kind of moving along slowly, but they're kind of like you kind of don't want to get near them sometimes. But when I have interest, it's really what happens is that the mind goes towards like, oh, what color is that? Like sometimes you'll see a yellow color or a different color coming out. And when you come close, you see patterns on the slug and you see kind of how little things go up like this. And there's a lot, you know, when you can take interest, you get closer and you see things that looked, that you thought looked really awful. But it, there's some beauty in it, you know, there's, you can really, it's like, ooh, what's going on with that? And so how can we do that with the difficulties in our own heart? You know, when you see the moments of your stomach, I mean, not really your stomach, but your emotional stomach turning when you hear something or when you think of something, you remember something and you just close down with embarrassment or shame, or you feel like, you know, you're kind of a failure because you got a sickness or something like that. And it's just life. But when you can come close and take interest and not run away, it could be, it's energizing us. You know, when you're interested, there's energy to really recognize and to allow. So it just comes back to the beginning and it helps those recognize and relax and allow to happen too. And the last one, which is really the most important of all, is the end part, is to see it all as nature. To see everything that comes in our lives, that this is part of life, this is nature. It's not a mistake that this happened in our lives. It's not because we did something wrong. I mean, maybe we look back and we could say we could have done it another way, but okay, let's take this as a lesson for the future. And so we're learning. We see nature unfolding. Nature is a natural unfolding of what has accumulated in this body-mind continuum from time immemorial, not just from maybe this life, but if you can get that big in your mind, you can see that it's from maybe even world cycles. As Manindra would say, it's, you don't have to believe it, but it's true. No, it really is. Everything that's unfolding now is, it's so imponderable that we think sometimes, where did this come from? You know, it's unthinkable sometimes. And so when we can see it as nature, we're more likely to not take it so personally. You know, that this moment is a natural unfolding of causes and conditions. That's an equanimity phrase. This moment is a natural unfolding of causes and conditions. That in the moment that it's coming out, in the moment that there's this allowance for it to be as it is, to kind of disentangle itself. In that moment that it's already happening, we just have to let it happen. How we respond to it is a different matter that takes some training in equanimity. So we're not responding with kind of cruelty or holding on. So rain, to relax and recognize, to allow, to take interest, and to relate to it as nature. This is just nature happening. This is one of the most important teachings I've gotten from Sayadaw Utejaniya, the teacher I've been studying with in the last years. So I'd like to end for now with this beautiful poem I came across by Donna Markova, and it's untitled. And it kind of has to do with our whole lives and opening to whatever we're blossoming into. I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live so that which came to me as a seed goes to the next as a blossom, and that which came to me as a blossom goes on as fruit. So let's just sit for a moment. And just noticing the impermanence of those words and the concepts, not needing to hold on to anything, just letting them flow away. Thank you for listening, and may those contemplations on compassion and wisdom bring some kind of benefit to your life. I'd like to take some time, just a little time now, to open the floor for any comments or questions that you have about that, about your how it works in your own life, compassion, wisdom. Maybe you've got the answers. Maybe you don't have a question. Yes.
I enjoyed my book as a music teacher. I find that metaphors can be very useful for understanding the essence of things unknown to us.
Mm-hmm. Any metaphor which helps to understand this inner work. Ah. What comes to mind right now is that butterfly that I talked about. And I remember a story that was told to me a long time ago about a person who came across a chrysalis. Is that what you call the cocoon? That was just partly open, and it was on the ground. And so this person looked more closely and saw that there was this butterfly already formed, but the wings were really trying to stretch and to trying to open that cocoon or that chrysalis. And it really had to use its own energy to do that. The person in the story that came along picked up the chrysalis and wanted to help the butterfly. And so started helping the butterfly by pulling the chrysalis more apart. And so they thought that they were opening it and being a help. But actually, it wasn't really helping the butterfly, because the butterfly needed to exercise its own strength to come out of that cocoon. And actually, the person that was trying to help didn't do a great service in that story. The butterfly ended up falling on the ground and not having enough strength to fly on its own. And so just remembering, I raised four children, and there were times that this brings up a whole different perspective. There were times when I had to be really tough with them, and really ask them to go through their pain and to really feel their pain and to really understand that this is life around them. They're not going to just rebel and change everything around them. And sometimes they were hard lessons for them to learn on their own. And they're all strong, and they're mostly, not in trouble. They were mostly not in trouble when they were growing up. But they became strong because I allowed them to have their own pain and to find ways, with my guidance and guidance of the elders around them. And so I also see myself in that way, every one of you has your own story. You've lived through life and you've seen that you've gone through a lot of different things that have made you the way you are now. A lot of ability to face life and to be with things as they are. And that was because you really had to open that chrysalis for yourself. You couldn't. If you had somebody else do it for you, you wouldn't have the strength. You wouldn't have the beauty that you have now. Yeah, so going back to Maya Angelou, and we see the beauty, but we don't know what that butterfly went through. So when we're going through that, those times, and sometimes there are big times and sometimes there are small dukkhas in our life, just remember that. Uh-huh.
So I find facing what's happening inside a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
And towards the end of the talk, you mentioned something like, so if you're in a reactivity, that it's better to allow it, even if you can intellectually see this is a reaction, this is a delusion, this is whatever. It's better to take the stance that it's part of nature. It's like not try to interrupt it, I guess. Or like you were saying, kind of like...
Be with it.
Yeah.
So may I repeat a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. She was saying that it's easier for you to face what's going on outside than facing what's going on. Sensing, feeling what's going on inside is more challenging. So basically, how to do that. And if you can feel it, sometimes I actually have to, you said you can intellectually know that, this is delusion or this is aversion or whatever. You can intellectually know it, but that isn't enough. Because it's almost, in a way, some kind of, it's an intellectual bypass, right? Even if it's a spiritually intellectual bypass, because you've got, aversion. It's either attachment, aversion, or, delusion. Okay, it's delusion. All right. But when we can actually feel confused, what does that feel like? Or there is aversion going on in the heart, a closing down or pushing away. What does that actually feel like? So sometimes, I've been practicing for a long time, sometimes I still have to say I've been going through something and it's really difficult. It's really, really hard inside. And there's a name, you can note it, you can say, this is whatever it is, fill in the blank. And then it's like, whoa, I don't know, I'm really afraid. So what's happening there is fear. Okay, so then there's a noticing, this is fear. And then I'll have to say sometimes, come closer. I actually have to say that, honest. And I'm, you know, practicing like 40 years now. I'll actually have to say, come closer. And then another thing I could say is, just touch it. Because Upandita used to say, connect and sustain your attention with that experience. Really, it's not just like, okay, that's fear, you know, got it. It's like, it's more like, come closer and then really feel it. And it's like, oh, it feels awful, whatever it is. And then sometimes it's not just come closer, it's like, feel it. And actually, not just touch it, but rub. Upandita used to say a lot, rub the attention on it. So it doesn't, like I could see this as a hand, right? That's, conceptually, this is a hand. But when coming closer, you come to see the extraordinary experience of roughness, softness, coolness, warmth, grittiness, and water element. And on that level, it's like there's no person. That's kind of the ultimate view of seeing things in that moment. And so then coming close to fear, it's like all kinds of things, heat, tightness, tension, pressure, you know, all of those things. In that moment, the absolute, the ultimate is being seen. But then there are moments of, I can't stand this, and you remember an incident or something like that and open your eyes to get more. So there's a lot of ways you handle that. But coming closer to and being with, really being with it. And then, you know, just on a psychotherapeutic level, you know, if you're a Dharma teacher, you really need a therapist. So my therapist says, if you can feel it, you can heal it. And it's true, you know, I really feel like when I can really get close to it, it's not so bad. I had a massage earlier today by my friend Candle, and she's going to listen to this talk, so then hi Candle. So she's going to laugh at that. So then when I was on the table, she said, It's not always as bad as you think it is, Kamala. And I said, oh, I have to make that one of my metta phrases or one of my compassion phrases, you know. It's not as bad as you always think it is. I don't always think it's that way. But, you know, we always think it's going to be so bad. But when you really get there, it isn't that bad. Actually, it's a great relief. It's a great relief to get really, really close to what is painful in your heart. Because it's painful because, you know, it's kind of yelling for attention. It's shouting. It's like saying, will you please come close and touch me? And recognize that this is part of this being. That it needs to be recognized, it needs to be touched. And so when it is, it's actually more of a relief than it's scary. Does that make sense? Okay. You're so quiet, I can't tell. Anything else? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's at least a key aspect that's the same, and that there has to be the willingness to be with whatever is present.
Yeah.
So, if you could say anything.
Okay. You were saying that there seems to be a connection or kind of a parallel or kind of the way that things are the same with regard to sati or mindfulness and also compassion.
Being willing.
Being willing to come close to. Yeah, being willing to face. Yeah, because in sati, one of the, I can't remember which one it is, one of the ways that sati kind of manifests itself, this could be the manifestation of sati, is the ability to face what is happening. The ability to face the experience. And so that takes kind of coming face to face with what you call the object. This is awareness, this is the object. To be able to come face to face with the object. And that's the same as compassion, to be able to come face to face. And then another thing that happens is the ability to come close to and to experience that on a deeper level. And so in the Dharma, in the Abhidhamma, is when the Abhidhamma is this kind of Dharma psychology, is to be able to feel the unique characteristics of that experience that doesn't have to do with creating a sense of self. You know, you're able to come close and feel what they call the sabhava of that experience, the unique characteristics, and then it's able to see, to feel the warmth, the coolness, the roughness, the water element, you know, the stickiness and all of that. And that is being felt on a whole other level. And also say it's compassion for the suffering. It's able to feel the component parts of that suffering really, really closely, and to be able to understand it as not self. To be able to see this moment of anger, this moment of gentleness, this moment of unconditional kindness, this moment of fieriness, and to see all of those as kind of in a pixelated view when you come really close. So then compassion turns into wisdom, and more wisdom turns into compassion. So that's what happens in with compassion, that's similar to what happens in sati. Yeah. Yes.
So a while back it was said to me that even wisdom has periods of progression.
Say it again, please.
So a while back it was told to me that, you know, even within wisdom, that there's progression and regression.
Oh. Yeah. So you started off saying that even in wisdom there is progression and regression. Yeah, sure there is, sure. And so we open to understanding things at different levels, and then we forget. And so we kind of revert back to like not knowing what we learned, but by touching those places that we open to that are new, when we're learning new things of how things are, that's how we kind of make the pathway to getting there more available to us, more accessible. So you then talked about the PTSD part of experience for you, and a lot of times feeling numb and not even being able to feel that. So that numbness, can you say more about that? Do you get confused during that time? Or just, is there confusion, or is there a sense of being far away from something? Nothingness.
It's truly nothingness.
Kind of feeling empty. there's
a lack of emotion, a lack of sensory.
Mm-hmm. So to begin with, that's where you would begin. Right there is where you would begin to feeling that, oh, there's a lack of this. There's an absence of this in your experience. But actually, just intuitively, I'm sensing that it might be good for you to do actually some loving kindness practice, you know, some loving kindness towards yourself or towards that actual experience to bring that there. Have you done metta or loving kindness? Yeah, it might be good for you to practice more of that because that's helping inclining the mind and heart towards coming close to and being with and being kind with whatever's happening. So just to practice being kind with that experience would really help. Yeah. So maybe one something. Tuari, did you have something? Were you raising your hand?
I was just saying it's 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. We're supposed to stop. All right. Okay. Got it. Okay. Thank you all for coming. Oh, yeah, because also... Lindell has an announcement to make. Yes, thank you.